Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
Du willst beides. Aktives Fondsmanagement und die Vorteile eines ETFs? Xtrackers aktive ETFs liefern genau das, die Verbindung von smartem Portfolio-Management mit effizienter ETF-Struktur. Kosteneffizient und mit dem Potenzial für Überrenditen. Aktive Strategie trifft auf ETF-Effizienz. Informiere dich jetzt auf xtrackers.de. Zusammenwachsen. Investitionen unterliegen Risiken. Werbemitteilung herausgegeben von der DWS International GmbH mit Sitz in Frankfurt.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
We must not allow ourselves to be intimidated. Our task is not only to win the battle, but to win the war.
I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Take a look at this country through her eyes if you really want to see something.
You'll
see the whole parade of what man's carved out for himself after centuries of fighting.
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature! And you will atone!
Seeking truth and justice in a battleground of deception and corruption, this is The Richard Serrett Show.
New York City, the shimmering epicenter of Western civilization, the financial capital where ambition meets opportunity, is staring down the barrel of a socialist catastrophe named Zohran Mamdani. This 33-year-old Democratic socialist, fresh off an upset victory over Andrew Cuomo in the Democratic primary, isn't just running for mayor. He's wielding a wrecking ball aimed at the heart of Gotham's greatness. With his brazen plan to tax richer and whiter neighborhoods and his unapologetic declaration that billionaires shouldn't exist, Mamdani is peddling a toxic brew of class envy, racial division, and anti-capitalist dogma that threatens to reduce New York to a dystopian husk. If New Yorkers are foolish enough to elect him, they're not just choosing a mayor, they're signing the death warrant for the city that never sleeps. Let's dive into the cesspool of Mamdani's flagship policy, the so-called Stop the Squeeze on NYC Homeowners Plan, which he doubled down on during his recent appearance on NBC's Meet the Press last Sunday. The scheme, dressed up as a quest for fairness, proposes to shift the tax burden from overtaxed homeowners in the outer boroughs to more expensive homes in richer and whiter neighborhoods. He claims it's not racist, just an assessment of what neighborhoods are being undertaxed and overtaxed. Oh, Zohran, you slippery sophist. You think you can explicitly target whiter neighborhoods for higher taxes, base your policy on racial demographics, and then dodge the racism charge by calling it a description of what we see? That's not just disingenuous. It's Orwellian doublespeak that would make Big Brother blush. This isn't about balancing the tax code. It's about stoking racial resentment, pitting Black and Latino communities in the Bronx and Queens against white homeowners in Manhattan and Brooklyn Heights. It's a cynical, divisive ploy to fracture a city already straining under economic and social pressures, and it's as morally bankrupt as it is dangerous. Mamdani insists his plan addresses an unbalanced property tax system, claiming wealthy neighborhoods pay less than their fair share. So let's shred that lie with some facts. New York's property tax system generates $30 billion annually, with high-value properties in places like the Upper East Side and Park Slope contributing the lion's share. According to the New York City Independent Budget Office, the top 10% of properties account for nearly 50% of property tax revenue, funding schools, subways, and services across the five boroughs. These richer and whiter neighborhoods aren't dodging their share, they're subsidizing the entire city. Mamdani's proposal to jack up the rates and tweak assessment percentages isn't justice. It's punishment for success. By singling out wider areas, he's not just targeting wealth, he's weaponizing race to justify a shakedown. This is the politics of envy on steroids, a betrayal of the Western principle of equality under the law. In a free society, your tax bill should reflect your property's value, not your skin color. Anything else is discrimination, plain and ugly. And it's a direct assault on the foundational idea that all men are created equal. When pressured on Meet the Press about the radical language in the proposal, Mamdani deflected, saying, "The use of that language is just an assessment of the neighborhood." Just an assessment? This is a man who thinks he can cloak racism in bureaucratic jargon and get away with it. He added, "I'm just naming things as they are." No, Zohran, you're not naming reality. You're crafting a narrative that paints white New Yorkers as the enemy, as if their success is inherently unfair. This is the kind of divisive rhetoric that fuels mistrust, fractures communities, and erodes the social fabric. It's not leadership. It's pandering to the worst instincts of class warfare. And let's not forget, New York is a melting pot. By targeting one racial group for punishment, Mamdani is spitting in the face of that legacy, replacing unity with resentment. This isn't progress. It's a step backward to tribalism, the kind of zero-sum thinking that has no place in civilized society. But Mamdani's not done poisoning the well. On CNN, he laid bare his visceral hatred for capitalism, telling Aaron Burnett he has many critiques of it. When asked point blank if he likes capitalism, he didn't hesitate. No. Instead, he trotted out Martin Luther King Jr., quoting the civil rights icon's call for a better distribution of wealth and saying, "Call it democracy, call it democratic socialism." Let's set the record straight. King fought for equal opportunity, not equal outcomes, enforced by a state wielding a tax sledgehammer. He marched for a world where character, not race or class, defined you. Mamdani's twisting those words to justify a system where the government picks winners and losers, where hard work is taxed into oblivion, and where resentment replaces ambition. This isn't King's dream. It's a nightmare straight out of Lenin's playbook, where the state crushes the individual in the name of equality. King wanted a colorblind society. Mamdani wants a society where race and wealth dictate your worth. The audacity of this distortion is breathtaking, and it's an insult to every American who cherishes King's legacy. Then there's Mamdani's war on billionaires, perhaps the most jaw-dropping part of his platform. "I don't think we should have billionaires," he declared on Meet the Press, "because their wealth is so much money in a moment of such inequality." Really, Zohran? In New York City, home to 123 billionaires, the most in the world, you want to declare open season on the very people who drive its $1.2 trillion economy? These aren't cartoon villains hoarding gold in a vault. They're entrepreneurs like Michael Bloomberg, investors like Bill Ackman, and innovators who fund startups, employ thousands, and keep New York's tax base afloat. According to Forbes, the city's billionaires have a combined net worth of over $600 billion, and their economic activity through investments, philanthropy, and taxes sustains countless jobs and services. Ackman, no conservative firebrand, warned that Mamdani's policies would be disastrous, predicting a mass exodus of wealth. He's not wrong. The Wall Street Journal reported that hedge funds are already fleeing to Florida, lured by lower taxes and fewer regulations. Mamdani's plan, an 11.5% corporate tax rate, a 2% wealth tax, and a slew of other punitive measures would turn that trickle into a tsunami. When the wealthy leave, they take jobs, investment, and tax revenue with them. New York's budget, already strained at $115 billion, would collapse, leaving the city unable to fund its schools, hospitals, or subways. This isn't progress. It's economic suicide. Let's talk history, because Mamdani's vision ignores the lessons of New York's past. This city's greatness wasn't built on socialism. It was built on the raw, unbridled energy of capitalism. From the Dutch traders who founded New Amsterdam in the 17th century to the titans of industry who made Wall Street the world's financial nerve center, New York has always been a beacon of opportunity. Immigrants didn't flock to Ellis Island for handouts. They came for a chance to climb the ladder. Even in the 20th century, when New York faced fiscal ruin in the 1970s, crime soaring, businesses fleeing, the city begging for a federal bailout, it was capitalism that pulled it back from the brink. Rudy Giuliani's tough-on-crime policies and Michael Bloomberg's pro-business reforms restored New York's shine, turning it into a global powerhouse. Mamdani's vision? Multi-year rent freezes, a $30 minimum wage, city-run grocery stores, safe injection sites, defunded police. It's a one-way ticket back to those dark days. The New York Times, no bastion of conservatism, calls his ideas pie in the sky, warning that rent freezes would shrink housing supply, his minimum wage hike would kill jobs, and his tax hikes would drive the wealthy out of town. The Washington Post went further, cautioning that Mamdani risks returning New York to the bad old days of civic dysfunction. History isn't a suggestion, it's a warning, and Mamdani's ignoring it. But this isn't just about economics. It's about the soul of Western civilization. Mamdani's socialism, like radical Islamism, is fundamentally incompatible with the values that built the West. Both ideologies demand absolute loyalty to a collective ideal, whether it's the state or the Ummah, and both crush the individual in the name of justice. Communism and Islamism share a contempt for private property, free markets, and personal liberty, bedrocks of Western progress. The Magna Carta established the rule of law. The Enlightenment championed reason and individual rights. The Industrial Revolution unleashed human potential through innovation. New York, with its towering skyline and bustling markets, is a monument to that legacy. Mamdani's policies would tear it down, replacing aspiration with dependency, merit with mediocrity, and freedom with state control. His refusal to condemn the phrase "globalize the Intifada," a slogan many Jewish New Yorkers see as a call to violence, is a chilling red flag. His dodge? I'm not here to police speech. It's cowardice, dressed up as principle. It's the same moral relativism that lets Islamists erode Western values under the guise of tolerance. As a conservative, I'm fed up with this double standard. We're expected to tiptoe around radical ideologies while our own principles, individual freedom, meritocracy, the rule of law, are trampled. Mamdani's hypocrisy is galling. He rails against billionaires while basking in endorsements from celebrities like Cynthia Nixon, who isn't exactly scraping by. He claims to champion the working class, but his policies would crush them. A $30 minimum wage? Small businesses, already reeling from inflation, would shutter, and low-skill workers would be priced out of the market. The National Bureau of Economic Research estimates that high minimum wages reduce employment for low-wage workers by up to 2%. Rent freezes? Landlords would stop building, exacerbating New York's housing crisis, where vacancy rates are already below 4%. City-run grocery stores? They'd bleed money faster than a government casino, competing unfairly with private businesses that pay rent and taxes. Even former Mayor Bill de Blasio, no capitalist cheerleader, says fears about Mamdani are exaggerated, but he admits his plans are a radical departure. That's code for disaster. When Aaron Burnett asked Mamdani what immigrants seeking the American dream would think of his anti-capitalist platform, once again he dodged, saying the dream is about stability, not wealth. Tell that to the millions who came to New York to work hard and build a better life, not to be taxed into oblivion for succeeding. Too many New Yorkers are working 8 hours and still feeling like they haven't made enough money to keep living in the city, he said. Well, no argument there. New York is brutally expensive. But Mamdani's solution isn't to cut taxes or regulation to boost opportunity. It's to double down on government control, hiking taxes on the wealthy to fund a spending spree that the New York Post estimates could cost $20 billion annually. His massive investments in public housing, free buses, and other giveaways sound noble, but there's no clear plan to pay for them beyond soaking the rich. Good luck keeping the subways running or the streets safe when the tax base flees to Miami. Philosophically, Mamdani's vision is a rejection of the individual. The West is built on the idea that you have the right to forge your own path, to own property, to reap the rewards of your labor. Mamdani's socialism says no. Your success belongs to the collective, and if you dare rise too high, we'll cut you down. His tax on whiter neighborhoods isn't just racist. It's a betrayal of the principle that all men are created equal. By judging people by their race or wealth, he's endorsing a system where justice is skin deep, where your worth is tied to your identity, not your actions. This is the same collective poison that fueled the Soviet Union's collapse, Mao's Cultural Revolution, and every other socialist disaster. Venezuela, once South America's richest nation, is now a basket case where people scavenge for food. That's the future Mamdani's policies invite. Mamdani's campaign, backed by Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, is a love letter to the radical left, but it's a death sentence for New York. His refusal to engage with critics, his dismissal of capitalism as the engine of prosperity, and his flirtation with radical slogans reveal a man unfit to lead the city of 8.8 million. New Yorkers, this is your wake-up call. Your city is the world's financial capital, a beacon of ambition and opportunity. Mamdani's socialism would turn it into a cautionary tale, a place where success is punished, division is celebrated, and the individual is crushed under the state's boot. Elect him. And you're not just choosing a mayor, you're choosing decline. The West didn't survive centuries of challenges by embracing collectivism. It thrived by championing freedom. Reject Mamdani, reject socialism, and save New York before it's too late.
Hey, denk dran, dass auch dein Immunsystem Hunger hat. Und probier's mal mit den Gesundheitszielen zur Ernährung in der App AOK Navida. Hol dir Tipps, Rezepte und Challenges für dein gesünderes Ich. Jetzt die App AOK Navida downloaden und loslegen. AOK Plus. Aus Liebe zur Gesundheit.
News not in the news.
Eric honor killings in Turkey, to the sanctimonious crowning of Canada's COVID czars, and the predictable collapse of Trudeau's green fantasy. Let's tear into these stories with the moral clarity they deserve. This is News Not in the News, where we expose the rot and champion the values of Western civilization. President Donald Trump, the bulldog of American sovereignty, dropped a bombshell last week announcing he was pulling the plug on trade talks with Canada over our so-called digital services tax, DST. This 3% levy targeting tech giants like Google, Amazon, and Meta was set to rake in billions from American companies starting Monday. Trump called it a blatant attack on the US, threatening new tariffs within a week. Lo and behold, Canada's globalist poster boy, Prime Minister Mark Carney, folded faster than a cheap lawn chair. On Sunday, Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne announced the DST's cancellation, paving the way for trade talks to resume with a July 21, 2025 deadline. Carney's spin? It's all for the best interests of Canadian workers and businesses. Sure, Mark, sure. This is a masterclass in geopolitical arm twisting, and Donald Trump is the professor. The digital services tax was nothing but a shakedown, a pathetic attempt by Carney's liberal elite to siphon cash from American innovation while pretending it's about fairness. Fairness? Give me a break. This was Canada copying the European Union's playbook, taxing U.S. tech giants to prop up a bloated welfare state while ignoring the economic fallout. Trump saw through it, called their bluff, and Carney blinked. Why? Because Canada's economy is tethered to the U.S. like a dinghy to a battleship. With $762 billion in trade on the line, Carney had no choice but to grovel. Let's be clear. This isn't about protecting Canadian workers. It's about Carney's cowardice. He's a globalist stooge, a former Bank of England darling who'd rather cozy up to Davos than stand up for Canada's sovereignty. Trump's tariffs? 50% on steel, 25% on autos. Were already squeezing us, and the threat of more had Carney's knees knocking. So, he scrapped the tax, proving once again that his new economic and security relationship is just code for bending the knee to Washington. Good for Trump. Bad for Canada. We're left looking like a nation of pushovers, led by a man who'd sell out our interests faster than you can say G7 photo op. This whole fiasco exposes the liberal obsession with taxing innovation while ignoring the real issues. It's economic malpractice. The conservative path forward is clear. Ditch these punitive taxes, negotiate from strength, and prioritize Canadian jobs, not globalist grandstanding. Carney's surrender is a win for Trump's America First agenda, but it's a black eye for Canada's pride. Wake up, folks. We need a leader who fights, not one who folds. In Istanbul, 18-year-old Oya Budak was brutally raped, impregnated, and then murdered by her fiancé in a so-called honor killing. After learning of her pregnancy caused by a convicted rapist, her fiancé lured her to a meeting, shot her in the chest and ear, and left her to die. Her unborn child perished with her. This tragedy marks the 209th femicide in Turkey this year, a country where women's groups are sounding the alarm over escalating violence against women and girls. The fundamentalist government has banned International Women's Day protests, but defiant activists vow to march anyway, demanding justice in a nation where 420 women were murdered by partners or relatives in 2024 alone. This story is a gut punch to anyone who cherishes Western civilization's hard-won values. Oya Budak's murder isn't just a tragedy. It's a symptom of a cultural disease festering in Turkey under its Islamist regime. Honor killings. Let's call them what they are. Barbaric executions rooted in a twisted ideology that places family honor above human life. This isn't some isolated incident. It's the 209th femicide this year in a country sliding deeper into theocratic darkness. And what does the government do? Bans women's protests. That's right. Silence the victims, protect the perpetrators. It's a playbook straight out of the 7th century. As a conservative, I'm sickened by the West's silence on this. Where's the outrage from our so-called progressive leaders? They'll scream about microaggressions in Toronto coffee shops, but turn a blind eye to systemic femicide in Turkey. Why? Because calling out Islamist violence doesn't fit their narrative. It's easier to vilify conservatives like me as bigots than to confront the uncomfortable truth. Not all cultures are equal. Western civilization, with its emphasis on individual liberty and the sanctity of life, is superior to ideologies that justify murder in the name of honor. There, I said it. Mark Carney, our globalist PM, won't touch this issue with a barge pole. He's too busy jet-setting to G7 summits to notice the erosion of human rights in allied nations. But this is personal for Canadians. We've welcomed waves of immigrants, and we must demand they embrace our values, not import practices that belong in the Stone Age. Oya Budak deserved better. Her death is a clarion call. We must defend Western principles against the creeping tide of fundamentalism, both abroad and at home. If we don't, we're complicit in the next tragedy. In a move that's left many Canadians spitting out their Tim Hortons, Doctors Bonnie Henry and Teresa Tam have been named Officers of the Order of Canada for their roles in the COVID-19 response. Tam, Canada's former chief public health officer, was praised for her commitment to health equity and leadership over her 8-year tenure. Henry, BC's health czar since 2014, got a pat on the back for safeguarding the health of Canadians. Both were lauded as heroes by the Governor General's office, joining 83 others in this year's honors. But let's not forget the flip side. These two were the architects of lockdowns, mandates, and restrictions that crushed businesses, divided families, and fueled distrust. The Order of Canada, created in 1967, is meant to honor outstanding achievement. But for many, this feels like a reward for authoritarianism. Isn't this rich? Bonnie Henry and Teresa Tam, the dynamic duo of Canada's COVID dystopia, are now being draped in the Order of Canada like they're modern-day saints. This is a slap in the face to every small business owner who lost their livelihood, every parent who watched their kids spiral into depression, and every Canadian who dared question the narrative only to be smeared as a conspiracy theorist. These two weren't safeguarding health, they were safeguarding power. Their lockdowns were a masterclass in overreach, turning Canada into a nanny state where dissent was a thought crime. Let's talk about Teresa Tam. For 8 years, she sat atop Canada's public health throne, preaching health equity while pushing policies that disproportionately crushed the working class. Her one-size-fits-all mandates ignored regional differences, wrecked our economy, and eroded trust in institutions. And Bonnie Henry? BC's lockdown queen turned fear into a full-time job, closing gyms and churches while letting big box stores rake in billions. Her sanctimonious press conferences, dripping with faux empathy, were a daily reminder that our freedoms were expendable. This is peak liberal hypocrisy. Mark Carney's government loves to reward its loyal foot soldiers, and Tam and Henry were the perfect enforcers of the COVID regime. They peddled pseudoscience, ignored natural immunity, and demonized the unvaccinated while cozying up to Big Pharma. The Order of Canada is supposed to honor service to the nation, not service to a globalist agenda that left Canadians poorer, sicker, and more divided than ever. These appointments are a middle finger to every freedom-loving Canadian who marched in the Freedom Convoy, who stood up to the tyranny of 2 weeks to flatten the curve, turning into 2 years of misery. The philosophical rot here runs deep. By honoring Tam and Henry, we're endorsing a worldview where individual liberty is subordinate to collectivist control. That's not Canada. It's China with better maple syrup. We need to reject this hero worship and demand accountability for the COVID debacle. No more medals for mandarins. It's time for a reckoning. The Trudeau Liberals' green innovation programs, the smart grid program, and emerging renewable power program have flushed $300 million down the drain with nothing to show for it. Launched in 2018 with promises of well-paying middle-class jobs and lower emissions, these initiatives have been exposed as a sham by a Department of Natural Resources audit. the Fed stopped tracking job creation and greenhouse gas reductions halfway through, admitting they can't prove a single job was created or a single ton of emissions was cut. This is the latest in a string of liberal flops, like the $950 million Superclusters program that promised 50,000 jobs but delivered squat, or the $1 billion Strategic Innovation Fund that fell 90% short of its job targets. Here we go again, folks. Another liberal green fantasy crashes and burns, leaving taxpayers holding the bag. $300 million gone. And what do we have to show for it? Nada, zilch, a big fat goose egg. The smart grid and emerging renewable power programs were sold to us as the future of Canada's energy sector, a utopian vision of green jobs and cleaner air. Instead, we got a bureaucratic black hole where accountability goes to die. The feds didn't just fail to deliver, they stopped bothering to check if they were delivering at all. That's not incompetence, that's contempt. Mark Carney, the eco warrior in chief, is the poster child for this green grift. He spent his career peddling climate dogma to line the pockets of globalist elites while ordinary Canadians struggle to pay their heating bills. This audit is a damning indictment of his vision, a government so obsessed with virtue signaling that it forgets to count the jobs or measure the emissions. And don't get me started on the pattern here. Superclusters, a $1 billion bust. Strategic Innovation Fund, a fraction of the promised jobs. These aren't programs. They're Ponzi schemes dressed up in green lipstick. I don't know about you, but I'm fed up with this climate cult nonsense. The free market, not government handouts, drives innovation. If green tech is so great, why does it need $300 million in subsidies to fail? The answer is simple. It's a scam to funnel taxpayer money to connected cronies while the rest of us choke on carbon taxes. Western civilization was built on ingenuity and enterprise, not on bureaucrats picking winners and losers. Carney's green crusade is a betrayal of that legacy, and this audit is the smoking gun. It's time to pull the plug on these pipe dreams and let Canadians keep their hard-earned money. Anything less is theft. I'm Richard Serrett. I'll speak to you again real soon. In the meantime, I remain unbowed, unbent, unbroken.